Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in lovely Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, South Carolina, and you can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your real estate needs. Just a reminder, as always, please like, rate, review, subscribe, download episodes, do whatever, leave a review, particularly a nice review, a rating, particularly a five-star rating, if you are allowed to do that on your app. Some apps don't allow you to do that, but many do, and I would appreciate if you guys could just leave a little feedback just as appreciation for this show. If you're watching this on YouTube, okay, and I do have this on YouTube, I have both the audio and video on YouTube, two different things, but if you search Selling Greenville Podcast, you'll find it. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll notice a little bit of an upgrade, and the upgrade is to my background. I've been telling you guys for a while that I was planning to upgrade the video. I've been talking about this for a very long time, and it's finally happening. There are more upgrades coming, but this video experience is going to improve as I have the time to improve it. I'm very busy, and this, you know, getting the video, which doesn't get a ton of watches, quite frankly, in comparison to the listens I get on the audio version, improving the video is not a huge priority for me at the moment, but it is something that I plan to keep improving. And ultimately here, my goal is to start doing some little shorts and maybe 1 minute videos that will go on my YouTube channel, on Insta, Facebook, other social media platforms, because I think that that could be an interesting way for me to break down some of the data that I'm looking at every single day, and that you guys that are listening really like, but that maybe the casual real estate person that's interested in real estate casually, they might not be willing to listen to a 20, 30, 40 minute episode of me talking and rambling about real estate, but maybe they're willing to listen to a 45 or 60 second clip. So there's going to be more of that coming. So I'm really excited about all of that, and I hope you guys are along for the ride and all of that. As far as today's episode is concerned, however, this is actually an episode I've been thinking about for a really long time. I actually started prepping for it a while ago, and then I decided, you know what, I had too many other things I needed to talk about, too many other things that were pressing, and so I decided to put this on the back burner, and then I recently came back to it. Basically, I had a question in my mind of people that have bought homes the past few years, and then ended up finding that they had to sell their home in the past few years. So people that bought their home, let's just say it a different way. People that bought their home in the quote-unquote top of the market and have had to sell their home since then, how are they doing, right? That was the original question that I had in my mind that led to this episode. The second question is, okay, I want to assess, you know, whether people that bought a home, you know, the past few years and then ended up having to sell it, whether they ended up losing money, how they did, what all that looks like. I had to then figure out, how am I going to actually assess this, and what am I actually going to do data-wise to try to figure out, to try to get to the bottom of how are these sellers doing that purchased a home a few years ago when the market was quote-unquote at its peak and have now had to sell since then. I'll get into the nuts and bolts of how I analyze the data here in a minute. But I just want to start by saying this. When people buy a house, they always have an idea in their mind for how long they plan to live there. For some, it's a starter home that they plan to live in for just a few years. For others, they think that their home is going to be their forever home, although it rarely works out that way, which I'll get to in a second. And for others, of course, you've got what some people call a step-up home, basically the home that's between a starter and a forever home. Maybe it's a home that people are buying because they need more space for their kids, or maybe it's just a home that they don't see themselves living in forever for one reason or another. But that being said, even though people have a time frame in mind for how long they plan to live in a home, I almost always find, as I alluded to just a second ago, people end up moving earlier than planned. It's very rarely that people end up moving later than planned. Almost always people end up moving earlier than they thought they were going to when they initially bought the home. And that's because of people having job changes, divorces that happen, unexpected pregnancies, deaths in a family, or failing health among extended family members or even immediate family members. All these things play a role into causing people to have to change their location, end up having to move prior to when they plan to. And unfortunately, there are some situations where moving prematurely can be a big problem. So for instance, if you're one of the first ones to buy a home in a new development, right? New construction, and you're one of the first ones. It's the first phase. If you don't know, new construction tends to happen in multiple phases. The number of phases varies based on the development and based on the developer. Sometimes it's multiple different developers that will go into the same community. But long story short, if you're one of the first ones to buy in a new development, odds are development is going to continue on in most communities for a few more years. It depends on the size of the community and other factors. But a lot of times, you know, developers right now, they're wanting communities to be big enough to be worth their while. So usually it's multiple phases. So if you buy in phase one, you can pretty much assume that there's going to be more phases for more years to come, and more homes that are being built. And so if you find yourself after having purchased new construction in a community like this, and then construction keeps going, and then you end up finding yourself in a situation where you need to move, you could really find yourself in a bad spot where you're trying to sell your lived-in home while buyers still have the option to buy new construction in that neighborhood. And by the way, new construction, you know, builders will try to increase prices on their new build. So, you know, phase one, perhaps the, well, I get asked this question a lot, actually, because people will see signs by these developers that say starting in the low 300s, and then they get in there and the cheapest home is like 385 or something like that. And they feel like that's false advertising. Well, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know if it's false advertising or not, but what I can say is that it's an old sign. Originally, there were homes that were in the low 300s, and then eventually inflation ran its course, and you know, some of that is the developers inflating things because they can, and then eventually things get gradually more expensive in a neighborhood. However, it doesn't always happen that way, right? And in this very weird environment that we find ourselves in, I've actually ran into situations where actually builders have had to reduce the prices on some of their later phases. And so you could really find yourself in a bad situation where, you know, you bought a house for $350,000 back in 2022, for instance. And in that same neighborhood, now you can buy a brand new home, very similar, for less than that. So there's no way that people are going to buy your home that you've already lived in for the price that you paid for, let alone most people are expecting to get more money than what they paid for their home. And I've actually seen this play out exactly in this way fairly recently. And so that's one example that you've got to be careful in. If you're buying new construction, I always tell people plan to live there for a few years because you don't know what the builder is going to do. You don't know what's going to happen with the market. But generally speaking, people that are, you know, looking at a neighborhood, if there's new construction available, they're going to look first at that new construction before they look at resales. And you don't want to get stuck trying to sell your lived-in home in a neighborhood that currently has new construction going up. Another example where people can get in trouble selling too quickly is when the market shifts, obviously. And that's obviously something that we've seen the past couple of years, I've already alluded to. So many people, to give an example, who bought their home in 2006 to 2007, saw their home plummet in value during the world financial crisis or the Great Recession, whatever you want to call it. I've looked at this. I see this all the time, right? When I'm like looking at property history, I'll see that people bought a house in 2006, 2007 for X amount, and then it got foreclosed on or whatever. And then eventually it sells years later. In a lot of cases, these homes didn't recover their value until 2016 or 2017. So imagine purchasing a home in 2006 and it loses value within the next couple of years and it doesn't go back to the value you bought it for. And again, this is not inflation adjusted. But it doesn't go back to even the non-inflation adjusted value that you bought it for another several years until 2016 or 2017. But that has happened. So you've got to be careful with that too. Well, that's the background. And let me say, I already said we've experienced a market shift. And as a result, there's been a lot of chatter of 2021 being similar to what 2006 to 2007 was, right? 2021, top of the market for this current cycle. 2006, 2007, top of the market, maybe 2005, top of the market for that cycle back then. And so the line of thinking is that, again, 2021 was basically the peak of the market, and people who have had to sell since then are finding themselves in trouble. Now, I have said this before, and I will say it many more times, that buyers today have mortgage rates that are in many cases double or more than double what they were in 2021, okay? This is the primary reason why the cycle is where it is. The very different cycle than what we experienced in 2008 going into 2009. And so that was related to lending and lending practices and mortgage-backed securities and all of that. This is a completely different problem. This is a Federal Reserve problem, and the Federal Reserve has stated it's something that they plan to ease off of at some point. We've already had that discussion a bunch of times. Regardless of what the Federal Reserve is doing, this is what we have to deal with, right? So we can't assume the Federal Reserve is going to do this or do that. We just have to work with the hand that we've been dealt. And now we're 3.5 years removed from 2021, which is wild to think about. We finally have data to assess what is happening and what has happened to homes and home values during the period of time from then until now. And of course, I don't like to go to Zillow or other flawed algorithms to try to get this data. And so I always want to try to source this data myself using the multiple listing software data that I have access to as a realtor. And I really get into the weeds, geeking out, number crunching. Sometimes I will spend, you know, if I have, like a weekend where I don't have anything pressing to do, I might spend an entire day just crunching numbers. That's just the way I am. I'm a data guy at the end of the day. And here's what I want to say before I kind of get into those numbers. And I always tell you guys this. It's really, really important for you guys to know that this is a Greenville, South Carolina podcast, okay? It is a real estate podcast, and we touch on, you know, a lot of national trends and things that are happening nationally, but real estate is inherently local, and this episode in particular is about Greenville, okay? So people who live in Austin, Boise, San Francisco, Chicago, etc., may have very different data to look at for those markets than the data that we will be looking at today. All right, so just remember that. Now, we're going to dig into the data here, but before we do, I want to introduce our sponsor, Piper Insurance Group. They are my go-to insurance company for home, auto, and umbrella insurance. Great company. Independent. In other words, some people might call them a broker. They call themselves an independent insurance agency. Long story short, they can quote multiple different insurance companies and bring back the best rate that they can find. I assume that they steer away from the broker term because some people might assume that they're tacking on additional fees. I have not experienced that personally. They are extremely competitive. They can insure investment properties. So if you got flips, rentals, ground up new construction, they can provide you homeowners insurance on those properties and even commercial properties as well. And they're licensed in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia. So if you're dabbling outside of the state of South Carolina, they can help you there too. If you're on the coast of South Carolina, they can help you too. It's not just in Greenville. They can help you all over this area of the Southeast. So please reach out to Piper Insurance Group. Their contact information is in the show notes, and they'd be more than happy to provide you a free quote today. All right. Let's dig into the data that I spent so much time looking at. Here is, I like to explain to you guys what the data actually is that I looked at because I feel like that's helpful. So I took all homes sold between January 1st, 2021 and June 30th, 2024. I took all of those and put that into a spreadsheet or I exported a spreadsheet. And actually, if we're going to be really technical, I had to export 7 spreadsheets because the MLS software has a limit on how many entries you can export at one time. So I had to export 7 different spreadsheets. I then took those spreadsheets, I put them into ChatGPT. I had ChatGPT filter out homes that were only sold once. And so then I ended up with all homes that were sold twice or more since 2021. I used ChatGPT for a bunch of other things in terms of massaging this data out. And let me tell you, it did a great job. ChatGPT can be hit or miss. It did a really great job. I double checked a ton of different things, and the way it handled the data was truly flawless. I was pretty amazed. This is one of the most impressive projects I've used ChatGPT for. So shout out to AI. Okay, maybe I'll get some extra hits because of referencing that in this podcast. So I did that. I removed homes that had sold twice within less than a year time frame. My thinking for doing this, almost all homes that sell twice within a year are flips. I wanted to remove flips as much as possible from this data because I just felt like that's not really what I'm trying to figure out here, right? I'm wanting to know how normal retail sellers are doing if they purchased a home after January 1st, 2021 and then had to sell it again between that time and now. I tried to eliminate those flips, but I'm sure that some flips still ended up in the data, and I do think in general it's fair to assume that many homes that did sell twice during this period of time were updated between the two sales, right? That's pretty normal. People update their homes all the time, but there's just not a great way to narrow this data down to eliminate homes that went from unupdated to updated or that had any sort of substantial improvements. It's just too manual, too difficult, and ChatGPT can't do it, or at least I couldn't come up with a good way for ChatGPT to do it. If you can think of a good way to do that at scale, and we're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of entries, let me know, because I'd be interested. But anyway, just understand there's a margin of error to this data, and I'll also be talking about price growth in this episode, but some of that price growth should be chalked up not merely to appreciation, but also potentially to improvements. And again, there's just not a great way to clean up that data. So just keep that in mind. The data is flawed. There's a margin of error, but I do think it's still useful. And at the end of the day, we need to ask the question, because most homeowners keep up with their homes and they do these normal updates, right? So I don't think that's a big deal. So at the end of the day, the question is, have homeowners generally been able to sell their home the past 3.5 years that they had purchased within the past 3.5 years and still end up making money? And when they're doing that, how much money are they typically bringing in when they sell? So here's what I found out. And I found this data to be, again, to me, it's very, very interesting, and hopefully it's interesting to you. So let's start with big picture. What was the average or median time, I took the median in this instance, time between sales. So what was typically happening? What was the typical length of time from the time these people purchased their home post January 1st, 2021 until the time that they ended up having to sell? Remember, I only was looking at homes that sold twice during this period of time. And the average for those homes, or I should say the median for those homes, was 668 days. In other words, 1.83 years is another way to look at that. So again, I don't know how that compares to other periods of time or compares to the average or anything like that. I'm just telling you guys, among this specific data set, most of these homeowners own their home for 1.83 years. Now, of this data set, of all of these people that ended up having to purchase and then sell within less than a 3.5-year time span during this period of time that the market has corrected and gone kind of crazy and all of that, how many of them ended up making money versus how many of them ended up selling for less than what they bought for? Here's what the numbers tell me. 95.41% of people that bought and sold during this period of time sold for more money than they bought it for. Over 95% of homeowners who sold a home that they bought after January 1st, 2021, ended up selling for more than they purchased it for. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean they came out positive. There's no clear ways of looking at that because there's a lot of other factors. But they came out positive simply from the metric of what they bought and what they sold for. So that leaves us with 4.59% that very clearly ended up losing money. They ended up selling a home for less than what they bought it for. Now, again, I have not analyzed this in comparison to other historical data, because honestly, you could really, really get into the weeds on some of that. But I'm just going to say this. I don't know how that number hits you. I think that that's a pretty low number. 4.59% of people that purchased a home after January 1st, 2021 and then had to sell it before prior to June 30th or on or before June 30th, 2024. Only 4.59% sold for less than what they bought for. I feel like that's an extremely reasonable number, and that speaks to the resilience of the Greenville housing market. I've talked about this a lot. The Greenville housing market is a very, very resilient market. It's a very stable market, and we're seeing that here in the data. What are some of the other numbers here that we're looking at? Well, let's look at the median sales price, right? Because I was curious about this. Now, what I did was I took the median sales price and I subtracted out seller concessions, closing costs that the seller are paying towards the buyer, all that kind of stuff. And I came up with a median sales price minus the closing costs of $307,353 for this sample size. That's pretty close to what our median price point is in Greenville right now, and that was basically what we're dealing with here. Pretty much your average home. So we're not talking about anything super crazy. We're not talking about, you know, a market that, you know, this basically, the reason why this is important is this sample size is reflective of essentially the broader market. This wasn't a wacky sample size of like all wealthy people or all people that aren't wealthy. This is a sample size of homes that were that would generally be deemed your average home in Greenville County. Now, what was the median difference between the purchase price and the sales price? Again, factoring in closing costs. This is going to surprise you. It surprised me. It was $57,000. That's a large number. And the average was almost $80,000. Again, I prefer the median, but I was curious about the average. And those are both great numbers. And again, this is with the median sales price being $307,000. And that was across the entire spectrum, right? So that includes the initial purchases. And so people, by and large, making good money if they, you know, purchased their home after January 1st, 2021, on or after January 1st, 2021, and had to sell within the next 3.5 years. Generally speaking, they're making they were selling for $57,000 more than what they bought for. I think that is hugely interesting, right? Because we're not just talking about, okay, people barely scraping by, right? $57,000, you can easily pay for commissions, you can easily pay for county taxes that you have to pay for, all of that. And so I think that most people that are having to sell are really happy, right? Obviously, not all of the 95.4% of people that sold for more than they bought for sold, you know, at $57,000 more than what they bought for, if that's a median number. But still, for that to be the median, I think that's extremely positive. The highest difference between the purchase and sale was $1.275 million, which was obviously a tremendously huge number. The lowest difference, right, the worst one between the bought and the sale price was minus $199,000. There was someone that lost, it was obviously a luxury home, they lost $199,000 from the time they bought until the time they sold. Luxury home buyers are a little bit different than your average, you know, middle-class home buyer. Wealthy people never like to lose money. Nobody likes to lose money. It doesn't matter how much money you have. When I used to work in luxury ground transportation, billionaires would quibble over a $200 bill. You know, that's the way they are. They become billionaires for a reason. And it's not just because they know how to make a bunch of money. It's oftentimes because they're a bit stingy as well, believe it or not. But nonetheless, when it comes to real estate, oftentimes they're willing to take risks on things that other people wouldn't be willing to take risks on just because they want a nice house and they're not buying the house to be an investment. And so sometimes we see these sorts of things. So what did this play out to in terms of how much actual price growth? And I'm going to say price growth, not appreciation, because again, it's not one-to-one whether these numbers are actual appreciation or not. But what sort of actual price growth are we actually seeing? Well, the median price growth that we saw for these homes from the time that they sold the first time until the time they sold the second time. By the way, there were a few homes that sold twice, more than two times in the sample size. I let them stay in there, and so they're included in here. There were some homes that sold three or four times during this period of time, which is crazy. The median price growth increase was 17.43%, which I think, again, you think about it, you sell a home within 3 to 3.5 years, or in this case, on average, 1.83 years. So less than 2 years from the time you bought it. If you're walking away selling it for 17.43% more than what you bought it for during a time when the market is correcting, I don't know what else you can say about the Greenville market. That is a stable, resilient market, okay? A lot of markets right now are losing home values very, very fast. And I'm going to be very interested. We're right on the cusp. I'm recording this July 16th. I waited as long as I could, hoping that the market stats for the month of June would be out by now, published by the Greater Greenville Association of Realtors. It has not come out yet, so we're going to have to do that episode next week. But obviously, we track that to see, you know, what direction prices are going. But man, the past 3.5 years, prices have just continued to go up. And I've been telling you guys this for years and years and years now. Some of y'all wouldn't listen to me. But hey, I can't always be right. I can't always be wrong. But on this one, I was certainly right. I also took, here's what, just out of curiosity, like, but on average, or technically on median, how much price growth were these homes experiencing per day and per year? On average, by which I mean the median, it's an awkward thing to say, on median, is that even the right thing to say? I think you're just supposed to say the median. The median price growth per day was $82.14. So, I mean, think about that for a second, right? If you are if you've been a homeowner since January 1st, 2021, your home, there's a good chance, again, this is metadata, so it's not one size doesn't fit all, but you can reasonably expect that your home is going up in value $82 every single day while you're doing next to nothing to it. That's pretty good, right? I mean, you're getting $82 a day doing nothing. What does that come out to per year? That comes out to almost $30,000 per year, guys. There are some people that aren't even making that much money in a year. You know, with service workers and whatnot. If people are getting paid only a hair above minimum wage, they're making way less than that per year. That to me, hugely informative, right? This is why homeownership is oftentimes considered to be the easiest pathway to wealth for most, you know, middle-class Americans, right? Because it is just a way to start to build wealth. It's a way to start to basically take control of your finances better and eventually, you know, build up equity. And then that allows you to do things in the future. Obviously, that $30,000 a year isn't liquid, but in some cases, people will take out home equity lines of credit, or they'll do cash out refinances or things like that to take that equity and make it work for them. And I know a lot of people that have really had success with that, including myself with my first home that I did that with. So that's all that I have for the data, and I wasn't really sure how to wrap this up. But I think here's how I'm going to wrap this up. I think that what we're seeing is that there's a lot of misinformation out there about, okay, people, you know, if you read headlines, you'll read people that have bought homes the past few years have gotten completely hosed on their home values. And of course, I could take this data and look at, well, what about people that bought in 2022 or, you know, whatever the case may be. I started in 2021 because that was the peak. And 3.5 years of sample size is a lot, you know, you can reverse engineer trends a lot better than with 2 or 2.5 years. I also didn't know that that median time between sales was going to be 1.83 years. So that came out as just a part of all of this. But I think that those headlines don't necessarily apply to Greenville, right? They only applied to 4.59% of the market here in Greenville that sold a home for less than what they bought it for. And I looked at some of them. I was curious, you know, what happened? A lot of those homes were rental properties. A lot of those homes were just fell into a massive state of disrepair after the homeowners bought them. Sad in some instances. But for the most part, people that have kept up with their homes and were owner-occupying have not seen their homes drop in value, even during one of the greatest market corrections of our generation, of our lifetime. And so I think that doesn't mean that it's never going to happen, that you know, that you're always going to be in that 95% of people that that are only seeing homes going up in value. But I think that that is an encouraging sign as the market shifts. You know, I'll have people sometimes text or email or call me freaking out, you know, is my home going to lose value? Is this going to be a problem for me in the future? Based on the data so far with what has happened during this market correction, I think it's a very encouraging sign for most people. And obviously not all markets are the same and not all market corrections are the same. So it might not always be this way. It's not going to always be this way. We know that there's going to be some market correction that happens in the future where homes are going to lose value. It always happens. It's cyclical, like with anything. But again, the Greenville market, very resilient, very stable market. And I feel like that this is just a great sign. If you bought a home the past few years, generally speaking, you don't need to be scared about your home having having lost value and you being locked in from the standpoint of your home value. Now, you might be locked in, you know, the lock-in effect people talk about. You might be locked in from the standpoint of you can't afford your next house because mortgage rates are so high. That's a real thing, but that's a very different thing than having your home lose value. That's a double whammy for some people. Some people are now underwater on equity on their home, and even if they sold, they wouldn't be able to move because of mortgage rates being high. That's terrible. At least if you're in Greenville, overwhelming odds are that you're not in that category, that you could sell your home and make profit, not just profit, but a sizable profit, 17.43% profit, you know, gross profit. Obviously, there are some expenses when you sell. But I hope that was interesting for you guys, very interesting for me. I appreciate you guys, as always, listening. Please like, rate, review, subscribe to these episodes. Find my contact information in the show notes if you need a realtor in Greenville. Reach out to Piper Insurance Group, also in the show notes, for any of your homeowner's auto or umbrella insurance needs. And we will talk again next time.